Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. So excited to be here today. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, videos, silliness, monuments to my own ego. Wait. At facebook.com/ballisticradio, co-hosting with me, Matt the Minion. Were you sitting too tall in that chair?
I was a little too tall there. You need to drop.
Drop it like it's hot. Oh, God. Anyway, we've got a great show, which I assume is going to be a great show with Craig Douglas, who is en route somewhere right now. Just a quick reminder. First, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, through some strange time warp radio recording trick, we're not actually here right now. I'm finishing up in Iowa at the combat focused shooting class that Rob Pink is putting on out there. And we'll be eagerly awaiting next week's show, which will also be trickery of recording and such, because then I'll be in Alliance, Ohio. But next week's show that I record that will not actually be occurring next week, I will talk about the thing that happens right now that's not actually happening right now because it already hasn't happened yet. That's too much, right? I need to just stop now. Let's talk to Craig Douglas joining us. Craig Douglas. Craig, how's it going?
Yes, sir.
So,
good, man. I'm driving.
Driving. Anywhere fun this time?
I'm driving to the sprawling metropolis of Goshen, Indiana.
Goshen, Indiana. Wow. That's,
yes.
That sounds like the metropolis for all things cool and awesome occurring, you know, which I guess...
Lots of Amish people, and it's pretty cool when you have to steer around buggies.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty high-speed buggies, too, man. Buggies with turn signals, which I think is that never fails to entertain me.
Wait. Isn't that against the rules?
Apparently not. Apparently there's some kind of pass you get, because it gets cold in Indiana, and I'm sure readership probably know better than I would. But now they have enclosed buggies, and they're heated, and they have turn signals.
Huh.
But they don't have an engine, and it just never ceases to. It never fails to elicit a chuckle every time I see one of those buggies when I'm in Goshen. I've been teaching there for a decade.
Nice.
Jeff Tensley up there, and we're doing a course this weekend. Three-way course with me, Paul Sharp, and a Brit combatives trainer by the name of Nick Koo, who really, really, really solid guy, huge dude.
And we're doing a three-day course. Is that this weekend? Jeez.
Yep.
I wish I could clone myself sometimes and be two separate places, because there are always interesting things going on the weekends that I'm able to go and take a class, and it's like I have to pick and choose. Well, that'll be pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. So as far as, I guess, for those that have not listened to the show in the past or have not heard me gush about you, which sounds really fanboyish, but I'll take that, I guess. I'll cop to that term. can you go over your background just real quick and what you do?
Sure. I retired out of law enforcement 21 years in 2011. So I've been retired 4 years. Most of my time in law enforcement was spent as a narcotics agent, and 2 years were spent strictly in an undercover capacity. I've been a martial artist for 40 years, and I was a serviceman back in the 80s when that was going on. And basically, what I do is I kind of focus on the extreme close quarter or contact range or entangled realm of weapons, fighting, and tactics. So I teach people how to use guns when literally somebody's wrapped up on top of them. I teach them how to use knives the same way. I do a solo structure movement course, and I do a vehicle course. I have four staple courses that I teach in open enrollment that basically focus on worst-case scenario. Things are really, really bad, and I tend to do this with heavy contact. I tend to do it with simulations. There's always an oppositional component in the training. So I'm not really a marksmanship and gun handling guy. I mean, that's important. I'm not diminishing the importance of that. It's just not what I do.
Right.
I tend to focus on tactics, interactive kind of training, and those kind of things.
Well, and, you know, personally, one of the things that I liked about, you know, I've taken two of your classes now, the ECQC and then the arm movement and structures. Well, one of the things that I've liked both of the classes I've attended is the ambiguity that you include in the situations, which, you know, in my personal limited experience, the situations I've been in that a gun has maybe been needed, they're not always cut and dry. There's always sort of this level of, okay, I need to make a lot of decisions really fast. What got you including that in your classes, I guess?
Well, it's always something, you know, obviously being an undercover officer and the duration that I spent undercover really kind of was a huge paradigm shift for me, just as far as problem solving and nimble thinking. I'll give you an example. You know, as a undercover police officer, not operating under color of authority, trying to commit a criminal act, buying drugs within accepted parameters of the law and prosecutability. How do I do that and still survive? So that in and of itself, the typical problem of an undercover officer and a very different thing than the problem of someone operating under color of authority. So I'm with an informant and I'm buying an 8-ball of cocaine, and we're waiting on a guy to show up, and a crack whore comes over to the car where me and the informant are waiting for a guy to show up. She starts soliciting the informant for sex. The informant's trying to blow her off. She gets insistent and assaults my informant while we're waiting on a guy to buy drugs in a neighborhood that's known for drug traffic. So what's my decision tree here? A, do I come out of roll and identify myself as a police officer? B, do I let the assault continue and hopefully it'll turn out? C, do I just drive away and try and call the guy that's bringing the 8-ball of cocaine and meet him in a different area? So those circumstances that I was subjected to and I operated in and day out, I think good undercover officers are predisposed to the work, but there's no doubt that being subjected to circumstances like that really pushes one towards a nimble mind and an agile thought process on problem solving and things that are just out of the box. There's no drill and there's no nothing you learn in a school. A school may provide the basis for forming something, but the bottom line is you literally have to come up with tactics on the fly.
Right.
So I did that, you know, exclusively for 2 years. And what it gave me and really instilled in me, I think, and I'm probably more predisposed to undercover work than probably some others, but nonetheless, it really, really instilled me creative problem solving on the fly. And it became a foundational saying that I tried to inculcate in other people I was training as undercover officers, my own narcotics agents, and I came out and worked topside. To get away from lingo, topside is the opposite of undercover work. So a plainclothes narcotics agent, but, you know, I'm not representing myself as an addict or a dope dealer or a hitman or somebody trying to buy, you know, whores or stolen property or whatever else, all the things I did as undercover. So even running, you know, other undercover officers as a topside narcotics agent, you know, you go to school, there are a couple of schools out there that teach this kind of stuff, but still, you only learn it by doing it. I did it quite a bit.
Right.
You know, most guys do short stints undercover. I stayed under 2 years.
Well, and that's kind of unusual from what I understand about that. Let me interrupt real quick because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Craig Douglas from ShivWorks. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by the Paulie-Palooza 3 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 15th and 16th outside of Garrettsville in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, visit paul-palooza.com. And remember to save the date, August 15th and 16th. So we're talking with Craig Douglas from ShivWorks right now, who, if I remember correctly, is actually, you're going to be up there at Paulie-Palooza, aren't you, Craig?
I am indeed. Yes, sir.
Perfect. I am certainly looking forward to that. Now, you were saying before the break, as far as one of the keys to what you did was being able to think on your feet, have a agile and nimble thought process. I'm paraphrasing there, but... do you think that is something that is overlooked inside of our community as far as decision-making goes, like the speed with which we need to be able to do that?
I do. Yeah, I absolutely do. So an agile, nimble mind and train someone to have that, that's not something you're going to learn on a range. That's not something, really, I think you're going to learn in any kind of live fire drill. You know, I think I think you really want to get that. And I think it's necessary. You know, I think it's important. I think it's as important to know not when to pull a gun. I think it's as important to as much as possible, without being clairvoyant, I think it's as important to be able to assess someone's intentions. I think it's important not to overreact. You know, I could go as far to say as that if you're going to wear a gun, that you're an ambassador for the firearms community. You know, and every time you do something stupid, every time you make a bad decision with a gun, it affects everybody. You know, there are millions of police officers in the United States, okay? But it only takes one to screw it up for everybody and make everybody look bad, you know? And I would posit it's the same way with people that carry firearms. It only takes one idiot with a CCW, or it only takes one guy shooting someone that didn't need to be shot. You know, it only takes one incident like that to fire up the media. If it bleeds, it bleeds. And all of a sudden now we've got, senators and legislators coming out trying to take gun rights away. So I think that's important. I think it's important that you know, our people be well-trained, you know, mindful, in word and deed, and be good ambassadors. I really believe that.
So something that kind of a direction I'd like to go, something you said just then, someone getting shot that doesn't need shot. Let's extend that a little bit further, because one of the things that I remember you talking about in the Amos class was the difference between legally being justified to shoot someone and
that's still being, whether or not that was a good idea.
Right.
You know, can you sort of elucidate on that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. So the legal justification for shooting someone, really when it comes down to it, a lawful homicide, that they're all homicides, whether it's a murder or not, that's up to a grand jury, but they are all homicides. But the bar for a legal homicide, you know, defending yourself of lethal force, is actually pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's pretty low. And there are a lot of people who can probably kill other human beings when they don't have to.
Right.
And it extends over in weird ways, like as you've experienced in the armed movement structures force, what I call a don't shoot yet.
Mm-hmm.
So typically when you read gun forum, Facebook groups, whatever, you'll hear someone when the subject of home defense comes up, or
right,
or an intruder or burglary or whatever else, somebody will say, well, you know what, you're in my house, you're getting shot.
Yep.
Period. That's it. That's my line. And you'll hear language like, well, that's my line in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear somebody say, that's my line in the sand, one of two things occurs to me. A, that person has experience, and truly, that is a line in the sand. Or B, that person really doesn't know what they're talking about, because I don't know how many times I've moved my line in the sand in my career when I had to adjust. So you'll hear that kind of stuff. And what I like to do then is challenge your thought process and say, okay, so anybody in your house gets shot? Well, yeah. I said, okay, all right. What about this? What about a 16-year-old kid who gets a text message from a slutty little cheerleader, you know, and she mistypes and gets the address off by digit.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this kid that slips through your window or gets inside your house, and you hear a bump because he's trying to crawl through the window. He knocks over a vase. And so it makes noise, so that noise wakes you up. He's trying to find his way in the dark. He's calling the stranger's name. And here you come, you know, with, you know, your AR and your light, and you put a muzzle on this kid and you blast him. Now, that may very well be a legal, justifiable homicide. There's no doubt. Now, if anybody is well-adjusted and has any kind of conscience and is not a functional sociopath, I would challenge that's going to be a difficult thing to live with.
Right.
So I think it's important that we look beyond simple solutions and what I would call a video game analogy. In other words, the video game. Hey, if this target pops up, pop, I shoot it. And that's why I like to talk about a don't shoot yet. And even ask people, okay, if you're looking at a 16-year-old kid who knows, whoa, I'm in the wrong house. You got a muzzle on this kid, and his hands are up, and he is scared out of his mind, and you see the whites of this kid's eyes. Are you telling me right now, sorry, dude, you're in my house. Pop. I don't think so.
What?
I don't think so. So I like to work through solutions in that regard. Okay, what do we do with this guy? He's a don't shoot yet. Doesn't mean I'm going to shoot. I may very well end up shooting this guy in 10 seconds, but for the moment, I've chosen not to. What do I do? How do I deal with that? What do I do with this guy if I encounter this guy relatively close to my kid's room? What do I do with this guy? Do I cut him loose of his own free will and scream at him to get out of the house? What if he is a burglar? What if there's two more guys in a car outside on the street waiting for him to get inside and call it all clear? Yeah, there are a number of things here in decision-making which formulates tactics. Decision-making formulates tactics. that I think are largely unexplored in the training community. And for the most part, you're not going to learn in live fire. There's no dot torture drill that teaches you how to deal with a don't shoot yet.
Well, and so I'll share my own personal story with that. And it goes back to the Arm Movement and Structure class that I took out in Oklahoma, and Spencer was there. And you may or may not remember this. I know you run enough guys through these, you may not. But we had this very conversation at class, and, you know, I'm like, I don't know, you know. And, you know, we talked about this, whatever, we get to the final Evo, and I'm, you know, I'm going through this, and there's Spencer, and he's a don't shoot yet. And there's this moment where I had to bypass him for whatever reason. I have the decision to make of whether or not I just shoot him and make it easy on myself, or go past him and try and deal with this other thing that's going on. And even in the scenario of there are no ramifications, no one's actually getting hurt, blah, 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 even knowing it was probably tactically the most sound idea that I could have at that instant, I still couldn't do it. Or I decided not to do it. And that was really, really interesting to me, just because, you know, I'm mechanically an okay shooter, but that was sort of something that I had not been presented with yet. We've got to go to break. We got to go to break real quick, Craig. We'll talk about this a little bit more when we get back. Right now we're talking with Craig Douglas from ShivWorks. You're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So we're talking with Craig Douglas now. And before the break, Craig, you were sort of telling us, you know, why you think ambiguity should be included in these scenarios a little bit more, and then giving us a practical example of that. Do you encounter a lot of pushback when you start discussing these ideas with people?
Not usually, no. Now, granted, you know, I'm not out there waving a flag, you know, telling people, hey, come train with me. You know, I'm not trying to convince people of the importance of this. Other than, you know, outlets like you, I mean, that's really it. You know, I don't try and sell people on what I do. Usually by the time somebody gets to me, they've done the research, they know what I do, and they've made a decision they want to explore this realm. So they're pretty open. You know, I don't really try and convince people of the importance of this anymore. I mean, people are, yeah, they can be, and I'm not being condescending when I say that. You know, it's just I'm not interested in winning people over. I've got plenty of work, and I'm happy with people that have made the decision to come to me. You know, if I have to spend a time convincing you that this is important, that's time that I can spend with somebody that has made that decision, where I can get them to where they want to be and where I want them. So I don't really get a lot of pushback. I guess if I tried to, you know, write more, which some people say I should, maybe I'd get more pushback in the community. Maybe I'd have more people offering, you know, counterpoints and things like that. But not really, John. I can't say there's pushback. In fact, you know, and literally, this is literally coming off my head, I think probably more people find it kind of intriguing. You know, it's interesting. It's a conversation that goes beyond the next drill, the next set of standards. You know, I think it's refreshing in a lot of ways. Not so much. No, not so much.
Well, I wasn't sure, you know, if when you get people that, you know, come to a class and have spent money and, you know, they've spent time, and if they get absolutely crushed by a scenario, not that you're setting them up to be crushing, but just because they've maybe not given enough thought to it beforehand, or like you said, they're not agile thinkers, you know, an unhealthy ego would be prone to pushing back at something like that, which is why I asked.
Yeah, I think so. I, And that's rare to be, you know, and I'm in my 11th year of open enrollment training. So, you know, I started when I was still working, doing weekend classes. And so this is year 11 that I've been doing open enrollment training. So, you know, and one of the advantages of open enrollment is just, you know, volume and diversity.
Right.
You know, I've been an academy instructor for since 1992, and have done in service and done all kinds of law enforcement training and as a law enforcement trainer in a many different subject areas. But the sheer, you know, when I started doing open enrollment training, the sheer diversity and the volume of training now all of a sudden just really increased. So, Even that being said, in 11 years of doing this, I don't get that many people that have unhealthy egos. And if they do, you know, I can usually either set it up enough to where they can get something out of it and still retain what they need to retain, as far as, you know, saving face or whatever else. Or if their ego is truly unmanageable, then I'll minimize their impact on the class. I've only had one person that I actually had to say, get it together, stop acting that way, or you can leave and I'll be happy to give you your money back.
Well,
you know, there's one person.
I'm glad I didn't take your money back when you said that to me, Craig. So.
Well, you know, it's funny too, man, because I think why don't you tell everybody about your first 2-on-1 with John?
Oh, well, that wasn't even a 2-on-1.
That's a good story.
That wasn't even a 2-on-1. That was a 1-on-1.
It was a 1-on-1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I lost it. I mean, you know, and here's what was strange about that to me. I've been in actual fights before where people have tried to, you know, make me not exist anymore. So it's not like,
right,
you know, it's not like that was this big giant revelation to me, but there was something about, and I don't know if it was just the environment, or I don't know if it was because at that particular instant I was in the worst shape I've ever let myself get in. Or maybe it was a combination of things. You know, you're around people that you respect. I don't know, but I got the fist helmet on, and John Pemberton, who, God love him, killed me deader than dead in that Evo. You know, at one point, he gets on top of me and takes my gun from me, and before it even gets to the point where he kills me, I start doing the classic, I can't breathe, which, you know, in retrospect, if you can yell that, maybe you are getting actual oxygen flow. But yeah, it was strange. 'Cause I had not ever experienced that level of panic before in a fight, you know? And it was really unusual for me. And it, you know, it was embarrassing too, which luckily I'm really used to being embarrassed, or it might have hurt me deeply emotionally. But you know, I cried a couple nights and, got over it, and here we are talking about it now. So, But
it's interesting. It's interesting too to me. So I think it's, and this is one of the reasons I think the pressure testing is so important. So by your own admission, it's certainly not your first rodeo.
Mm-mm.
You know, on fisticuffs, getting stomped back, blah blah blah. But in a particular set of circumstances, on a particular day, with a particular person, you know, look at the effect.
Yep.
Something never experienced, and to me that's fascinating, and it just speaks to the issue of constantly pressure testing, because, you know, we think that confidence is something that has an accumulative effect. You know, if I can get through one gunfight, then I'll be good. If I get through two, I'll be twice as good. If I get through three, I'll be three times as good. I'm going to be that much more confident because I'm that much more confident because I'm that much more experienced.
Right.
The reality of it is that's not true. And you never know on a particular day really how you're going to do.
Well, no.
You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't. You could have four serious, and I tell people this all the time. So you take a SWAT cop who's got three shootings under his belt, okay? He's done hundreds and hundreds of entries. He's always had initiative. He's always had a tactical version of the NFL behind him. He always does well. Dude has confidence. You know, he is a slayer of men. One day, you know, he gets accosted, you know, off duty. He's carrying a J-frame. You know, he slips and falls in some hydraulic fluid, cracks his head, and then gets kicked in the head, barely gets up, and then finally gets his J-frame out and, you know, wildly point shoots.
Yep.
You know, it's so you never really know how you're going to do. You never really do. And I'm not saying that from to leech confidence away from anybody. But the pressure testing is important, and the validation component of your training with opposition, okay, is important.
Right.
And it's important to internalize that. It lets you know, you know, when you do 10 simulated near full contact oppositional gunfights with SIM or marking cartridges of whatever manufacturer, and you say, well, I did okay 7 times, I didn't do okay 3 times.
Right.
You know, one side of you can say, well, you know, my odds are pretty good. Another side of you can say, unless it's one of those days that happens to fall of those 3. So I think that's important, dude. I really do. You know, it really keeps you honest. Here's the other thing. You can't have an inflated sense of ego and do that.
Right.
You can't. So I think it keeps you more honest. It keeps you more realistic. I think that's one of the reasons that the people that do the training with me are just the best people in the world. I mean, I tell my wife all the time, the coolest people I know, the most interesting people, the most well-adjusted people I know are the people that come out on weekends and shoot each other with simulations and punch each other in the face.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's – yeah. Well, we got to go to break. I will say this. It occurred to me, and one of the biggest things that I had going on in that fight with John, you know, the last actual fight I had been in prior to that had been 5 or 6 years previous, when I was still benching above 300 pounds and, you know, was running 2 or 3 miles a day.
Sure.
And that's what I had based my level of performance on, which in retrospect, dumb, but that's what I was used to, was being able to do the stuff that I could do when I was doing that. And that's not what the reality of it was. But anyway, we're talking with Craig Douglas from ShivWorks. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Tac Strike Steel Target System, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the arch frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 40, 50,000 rounds now, Minion?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Of rifle and pistol ammunition without a single problem. I try and break them, they don't break. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. So we're talking with Craig Douglas from ShivWorks about all sorts of interesting things. Apparently the last segment was dedicated to how terribly I sucked in the last class of his that I went to.
You didn't suck at all, John. You had an average experience like most people do. My job is to make wheels come off somehow, some way for everybody in a controlled way.
Right.
And to challenge people. Something you said, though, I think is important, a point you made, and that was right before we closed out for the commercial, was you thought of yourself in a way that you were when you're at your best, when you bench almost 300 pounds, you were running 2 or 3 miles a day. And I think that's a really important point.
Yeah.
We always base our current performance or how we think we do in a fight, in an altercation, what have you, on the best us that we know. And the best us that we know may not be who we are right now.
Right.
We always think of ourselves as the guy who benched 300 pounds, the guy that shot a sub-2-second fill drill. And unless you're doing that constantly, you know, if you shot a sub-2-second fill drill last year, and you hadn't been doing anything, you hadn't been doing any sustainment, it's doubtful that's going to be how you perform.
Yep.
You know, and I think it goes back to, you know, people look at, when I look at myself in the mirror, I don't think, wow, you know, you're closer to 50 than 40. I don't think that now. I do think that now, but you know, that just the sheer fact of my age, I'm not old, you know, but I'm not young either. You know, that's tough to reconcile. You know,
right.
I still think I can do the same kind of stuff that I did in my 20s. You know, and I constantly struggle with that. I'm just now getting to a point where I accept who and what I am in the moment. And I think most people, when it comes to tactics and strategies and capabilities, certainly in the pursuit of all things manly, you know, with men always base what they can do right now on the best they ever were.
Right, right. I've tried to get myself past that just because I get to see constant reminders and you know, and I do pretty consistent performance tracking on pretty much everything that I do. So I get to watch the ebb and flow of my personal skills. So I'd like to think where I am at right now, I've moved past that a little bit, but it certainly was a struggle. And that was certainly one of the bigger, you know, the bigger wake up calls for me. The funny thing about that, going back to the, you know, the one incident at your class, was I still have that undershirt that I wore that day, even though it's got three holes blasted in it, just to remind myself of, hey, if these were real bullets, I wouldn't be here. You know, because yep. I, like I said, John shot me to pieces with my own gun after he took it from me and sat on my face and just humiliated me greatly. So, John, if you're listening, thank you for that. It actually was really helpful, though.
So it's about, and here's the thing, man. So you were in the worst shape of your life when you did that ECQC, and shortly thereafter, that sent you on a renewed interest in fitness. You've lost what since then? How much weight have you lost?
Since then, I'm down about 30 or 40. See, I'm up right now, so thanks for bringing it up. But no, it definitely was. It was certainly a wake-up call to where I needed to be cognizant of things like that, you know, and dedicate a little bit more time to being, you know, multimodal. It gets thrown around a lot in the circles that we all travel in, you know, but the fact that I can run a sub-5 or on a really good day a sub-4 fast drill doesn't really help me that much if I can't pick up my own body weight if I'm fighting with a guy on the ground, you know?
Yep.
So...
And it's, you know, I certainly didn't set out to become a life coach, you know, but if an ECQC experience, and this happens a lot, if an ECQC experience can motivate someone, if it can be so powerful, you know, that it puts people on a path to lose 30 or 40 pounds, shoot better, get healthier. Man, that's pretty time well spent, you know.
Yeah.
And if I can get that kind of, if I can create that kind of change, again, I don't and try and do that. I give them the experience, but the experience is so powerful that happens a lot. I'll see somebody in a class. We'll finish up. We'll do the hot wash on Sunday. You know, I run long days, typically 10 or 11-hour days, because
yep.
I want people to get their money's worth. And, you know, they're trash. They're a train wreck. It's the hardest thing, literally, some people have done in their entire lives.
Yeah.
The hardest thing physically and emotionally. And they finish. And they say, where do I go from here? Well, dude, you know, I think the experience informs you of that. So,
right.
You know, I would say, hey, try and focus a little bit more on your fitness, you know, and I'll see them a year later, and they'll come up and shake my hand, and, hey, man, good to be back. Do I know, have you done getting training before? Yeah, it's Dan from last year. Hello, Dan. How much weight have you lost? 80 pounds.
Right. Right.
You know, that really makes me feel good. I mean, that's you know, I'm pretty damn lucky in that, you know, I get to do what I love doing, pay my bills, and literally deal with and meet the best people I know. I mean, they've changed my life. They've given me a fantastic life. They are everyone here in my coursework and everyone listening. You know, these are my patrons.
Right.
I'm extremely fortunate. I have a huge debt of gratitude to everybody that comes out and does this training. They are the best people in the world. I can't emphasize that enough, and how fortunate I am to have the opportunity to spend a weekend with them.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I totally get that. You know, I certainly don't make nearly as meaningful of an impact on people as you do with what you do. But, you know, just the self-satisfaction that I get, you know, when someone will message me or say to me, you know, hey, you really made me think about something I hadn't thought about before, or I just see them stop saying stupid things. It's incredibly rewarding. So, but we got about 2 or 3 minutes left in the show, because it's a quick hour. Is there anything, you know, if you could leave people with one thought, what would it be?
Be mindful in what you do. Be mindful in how you do. I think that's the most important thing, is being mindful. Think about thinking. Don't be an automaton. Remember that life is gray. It's not black and white, you know? And that reflects what you do with or without a gun. And that's what I would leave everybody with.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate you taking time today, Craig. Now, if people want to find out more about you, you know, how about you tell them how to get a hold of you and what you got coming up next?
So I've got this year, I think I've got 30 open enrollment classes that I'm doing all around the U.S. and outside of the U.S. I'm in England, Germany, and the Czech Republic teaching this year outside of the country. Got 4 closed classes with Gov and other and whatever. Shivworks.com is the little website that needs updating and refreshing, but it doesn't look that good because I'm not technologically savvy and I'm not real flashy and that kind of thing. But it's got the current training schedule. The training schedule is updated, and you can see it, and it works well. I'm going to try and do a push towards cleaning up my nasty act and getting more modern. I'm just now getting into Facebook.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you're actually using your real name on Facebook now, which I thought was amazing.
Using my real name on Facebook. Well, dude, I just, you know, hey, man, you know, this is a subject for another podcast.
Yes.
I loathe the narcissism in a lot of things, you know, internet, and that would include social media, that would include, you know, the training industry. You know, I think there are a lot of guys that are far more interested in being someone versus doing something.
Right.
I see that more and more.
Right.
It's disturbing. But nonetheless, so yeah, I'm starting to try and get my act together and modernize and you know, do things right as far as you know, all things internet. But see, Shivworks.com has the training schedule. It also has course descriptions. I know we use some acronyms with people probably that they don't understand. So those acronyms that we use are the acronyms for courses: ECQC, Extreme Close Quarter Concept, AMIS, Arms Movement and Structures. There's the descriptions of those courses that John and I talked about are available on the website, Shivworks.com. So you can read what the course is about, see where the course is at, and you can run me down probably in a few courses.
Perfect. Hey, thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. You drive safe, brother.
Dude, thank you, man. I'll see you soon, okay?
All right, take it easy. So, next week, I'm not quite sure who we're going to talk to yet because I do things last minute. But make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.